So welcome, first talk, first afternoon talk about integrating Progress role-based into open edge applications. What I'm going to show you are several ways of how you can use role-based together with open edge applications. I'm going to show you the ways that Progress is introduced with product features, but I'm going to spend more time focusing on additional ways that I find equally interesting for open-edge application partners. I'm Mike Fischner, working for ConsultingWerk. We're Progress focusing, open-edge focusing, independent consulting organization. We're based in Cologne, Germany, working with customers all over Europe and once in a while also here in North America. We have developed a couple of tools, developer tools, frameworks that we're using with our customers and more or less standardized consulting programs around those tools. I personally am using Progress now for 24 years, started with version 5. A couple of areas that I've focused a lot in the last years, GUI 4.NET, object orientation, generally software architecture or integrating OpenEdge with, well, anything, especially Progress's new toys like role-based. Quick overview on our tools. The WinKit can help Progress GUI applications to look more modern. Smart Component Library is our OpenEdge reference architecture framework where we have tools that simplify building modern applications. And Smart Component Library, that's why it's highlighted, is also the tool which, for which I started looking into role-based and how to connect role-based and OpenEdge. WinKit and Smart Component Library can be used together, also Dynamics 4.NET, in case there's still someone using a Dynamics application, wants to make it a little nicer. We have a solution for that too. You see from the other names, just very quickly, that we try to have components that talk to all the various Progress products that have been getting their information. The agenda for this talk, I want to give you a quick overview of Progress role-based in my own words. Not necessarily Progress marketing approved. And then, focus on three integration scenarios, one using the database and one using the adapter that Progress has developed, and then using another way that I think is very interesting for Progress applications that are deployed somewhere at the customer side, but need to be extended using a web application and where you need to exchange data, not permanently, where you want to avoid having a permanent internet connection to the application. So I'm really turning around the integration scenarios that Progress developed with the OpenEdge adapter for role-based and making it a role-based adapter for OpenEdge. What is role-based? Who has used role-based? The search. It's good, what I saw. Role-based is a platform for developing applications for the cloud, and one of the things that Progress sees as a key differentiator is that they can host it for us, or we can take it and install it on our own hardware or on our own cloud and have a little bit more control over it. The fact that we can get it hosted by Progress makes it very easy to use it. You subscribe, you get a 30 days trial, and if you like it, you can just continue to use it for a very, very fair price, I would say. It's targeting your application for browser and for mobile devices. I personally don't like the term apps for business applications. Apps always sound like a toy or something like that, and I think some of these are really serious applications. And Progress has two different kinds of applications that you can build with them. One is for public websites where maybe your customers or your customers' customers could be accessing the application, and the other model is for internal users that eventually could do something with the data that has been entered by the customer's customers. The applications are rendered in the browser using HTML and JavaScript is used to execute code on the client and on the server. And those that know me know that I hate JavaScript. So for me, it's the fact that such an unstructured programming language becomes so relevant is really giving me sleepless nights. Rollbase has been acquired by Progress Software almost exactly a year ago. So last year here at this conference they announced the acquisition. So the press releases went out also on Monday morning. You can get into it by going to www.rollbase.com and then you have Progress hosted version of it. Or you can download it there and run it on your own hardware. When you hear Progress Pacific, Rollbase is one of the key products in Pacific, if not the key product. Process Open Edge Developers, what is it? Well, we could look at it as one alternative to WebSuite. WebSuite hasn't been updated in over 10 years, not significantly updated in over 10 years. And Rollbase is a new product. Making it more easy to build what people call responsive web application, whatever, because none of these frameworks is somehow connected out of the box to WebSuite. You could look at it as a process alternative to force.com. So it's probably the most famous platform for building apps in the browser for the browser. And then one of the key differentiators is that you could host it locally if your customer would require that it's not hosted on a public service. It has migration options from force.com or MSXS. And I think these migration options give us also a clue on what kind of apps could be, or application could be written with it. If you're having open HDRP systems, you may have experienced that your end customers are building additional solution using Excel files or MS Access, and those are hard to control. And with a tool like Rollbase, it's very easy to build similar applications in a more controlled environment. Again, this is my way of looking at it. It supports styling and corporate identity, so if you look at Rollbase screens, and those that I'll be showing you briefly in this talk, they look very basic and you may not like them, and the fact that in the latest release the orange color has been adopted to parts of the UI and other parts are still more rouge and really don't look very beautiful. But you can style it yourself. And a very good example for a completely styled Rollbase application is the website register for the Progress Change Conference. And that has nothing to do with this UI. So that's the standard UI of Rollbase. That's what typically would be used by internal users. You got these lists of records shown in columns and rows, hyperlinks, and you can click on that and my pointer wouldn't have lost power. I could show you how it can get into screens where you could then enter records. So these are the standard Rollbase UIs that everybody who attended, like myself, at Exchange, a three-hour Rollbase workshop could be building such an application. And that's actually the screens. I did build them on the day after that workshop. So it's very easy to get into that and build applications based on entering data into tables and defining relations between those tables and so on and so on. But like I said, you can also use Rollbase to build websites like this, so the Exchange website. So I was actually very surprised to see when I registered that www.rollbase.com appears in the URL. So let me show you a little bit about Rollbase. So I'm going in the browser, closing those, going on www.rollbase.com, logging in. I'm using the same username and password
that I'm using on the Progress Communities platform already been logged in, and now I'm in role-based. So I can now navigate the objects, and as it is with cloud applications, really dependent on the reliability of the hotel Wi-Fi. So it sometimes takes two clicks until something happens, but I don't think it's due to role-based. So we're seeing here a record shown in role-based with comments and individual fields, and I could edit that record and change something, save it, and now to apply validation to it, there's a trigger model similar to what people that have been using ADM2 or ADM1 to build application they've known. So field level validation, record level validation, and those codes would be written in JavaScript. Role-based calls call these things not records, calls them objects, just a different name for the same thing. And if you have the rights to do that, you could modify the definition of the object, so the meta schema behind it, on the fly while using the application. So I could go into the object definition and seeing some basic properties of this object, like a name in singular and plural, a name, and that will become important in the later part of the application, the so-called integration name, which I would use to access this from the APIs. And it's called customer force, so I think it was my fourth attempt to build a customer object that I liked. And then there's some fields, and I could, on the fly now, create a field of a certain type, give it a label, and that should be enough. I could define on which of the pages, on which of the views it should appear, and save it. And I could immediately, if I go back to that object, start using this field and enter data there. Come. So if I go into record now, we're seeing this example field that I just created, and I can start entering a value there. So now all this is designed to be very quick and easy, be able to extend this and customize it for not very technical users. So, let's start with the first integration pattern, a possibility. One thing that Progress added very, very quickly after the acquisition was the ability to deploy role-based using a Progress OpenEdge database as its repository. And then in this database, role-based will store the objects and the metadata. And the tables that role-based typically used are not necessarily normalized. So they're mainly using a single table for everything. That's why we don't need to worry about extending a database schema when I add a field on the fly, because the field is already there. But I can also use then this shared database to have other tables in there. And those could actually be the tables of your ERP system or whatever is your OpenEdge application. And role-based could access them and visualize them, navigate them, and we could modify them. And that's one way. It's only supported if you host it yourself. So in Progress's hosted portal, there's no way to have your own database in there. It's kind of like logical. So let's look at the Progress OpenEdge adapter for role-based. This morning there have only been a few people that raised the hand when question was asked for OpenEdge Mobile, so I will not ask the same question again. But Progress is reusing everything they did for OpenEdge Mobile for role-based. So OpenEdge Mobile is built around accessing the Progress app server with a tool set and with a runtime environment and a JavaScript library which is used then on your mobile phones. And this same stuff can be used in role-based. So that's one of the beauties of using all the current internet standards and techniques, that it's very easy to use it then in different similar scenarios.
Are you saying that you can download open in a role base and want to run it locally?
Yes.
Does that mean that the open edge mobile functionality that's only in the cloud now, that you can't download and run locally, you can now run locally?
No. The mobile app builder, Shelley Chase, correct me if I'm wrong, the mobile app builder is always hosted by Progress, and if I download Rollbase, the mobile app builder would still be
using the cloud.
It will direct you to the cloud then. So you could use that functionality, but you wouldn't get hands on your own installation of the mobile app builder.
Is there any chance of changing that?
It's on the roadmap.
It's on the roadmap.
Says the product manager.
It's on the roadmap.
So,
yeah.
So what that allows us is to connect from Rollbase to the OpenEdge app server and have the so-called business entities there. I always have to use quotes when I call these things business entities, because it's actually just an interface to a business entity, and we have to write the business entity behind it ourselves. So it's one of the poorest names within. It makes it easy, but from an architectural point of view, it's poorly wrong. So we can use that to talk to the app server for the purpose of reading data from timetables or pro data sets and updating it. It's talking through REST, so it's a communication protocol, and JSON messages. And the whole purpose is to store and access data from an OpenEdge application database. And there's a lot of documentation from Progress and blog articles and all that stuff around this. So there's an article by Gary Calcott, who's working for Progress. If you click on this link, so if you actually get the slides download, click on the link, there's a video showing all of that. Also going to show you now very quickly. So what are we using? We're using the app server. It's a backend for reading and modifying data. And besides of reading and writing data, we could execute custom code, which could be a triggering report or doing a calculation for price or whatever you need in the Rollbase application. We use REST as a communication protocol, and I'll show more about REST in the next section. We're using the REST adapter that Progress built for OE Mobile in 11.2 here. The REST adapter is a similar component like the web service adapter and the app server internet adapter. But one thing that Progress really made well here is, for a developer, you install an OpenEdge developer's license and it just works. Because Progress now has a Tomcat, we don't need to go to tomcat.apache.org and download a good enough version of Tomcat. It's there. It's a version that's supported and it's configured, and you just need to start it. Progress usually says that this Tomcat is not meant for production, because then you should care more about security. I think that was your comment this morning. But for a developer, it's a very easy getting into. And the tool which has completely disappeared as a tool is a ProxyGen. So for the web service adapter, we would have to get into a very tiny Java-based screen, which works very fine on a 20-segment screen, because you need a Magnify. This ProxyGen UI would need a refreshment. Instead, they've completely thrown that away for the purpose of the REST adapter. So it's still required for the web service adapter and the .NET proxy and all this other stuff. And all you need to do is you need to annotate your code. Annotations are, I would say, technical comments. They start with the @ sign and describe in the code what you want to expose to the REST adapter. And we'll look at that code right now. So what I have, I hope it's still working. We'll reconnect on an Amazon EC2 instance, which we're running in in the European data center from Amazon. I do have a developer studio and an app server installation with a REST adapter.
And that's a very simple method. It's not very advanced code in there. It gets a character parameter and it returns it for data set. This character parameter is a requirement for using this in the way that I'll show you in Robis. It's one character parameter that we get for filtering, and we can decide whether we want to get a query string in there, or whether we interpret it as just the beginning of a customer name or whatever. And based on this one character string, I just do a very simple for each. On the customer table, all records that begin with this filter, and I count to 20, and I don't deliver more than 20 records. I just use a buffer copy, so very basic 4GL statements. Nothing fancy with pro data sets and data access code here. And by the use of a wizard, there's these annotations at the top. And those annotations explain the REST adapter how to use it in this context. And part of that is you get the so-called catalog file. And I have the catalog file locally. It is a JSON file. JSON is very similar to XML, which uses curly braces instead of the HTML-like characters. And it describes maybe the fields which are there in the temp tables, and which operations are possible. So I did allow, by what was written in those annotations, to modify and to read and to delete records and so on. I didn't write the code for it, but there are empty methods for that. So now I can go into the Robis portal and click on this plus button here to create a new object. And I create an object from external metadata, because the data is not hosted within Robis, it's hosted somewhere else in our app server. And there it offers me to use the OpenEdge service. And now I need this JSTO catalog file, which will be uploaded, and I need to know the URL of our machine in the EC2 cloud. And I click Next, and now this catalog file has been created, and it asks me for some very basic properties, like what is the singular name, what is the plural name of the thing, and what is the unique key, because that's not accessible from this file. And I press Create, and if I now go to the application, there's now this new tab, Customers. And now Robis has done the app server call. I can show you that somebody has done an app server call, and you must believe me that Robis was it, because there was just now a request. And if I use the filter and refresh the view, I'm getting different customers back, and the app server log shows me somebody filtered for AMC. Could still be somebody else, but believe me. And I can also go into the standard Robis views and edit. And we have a browser-based application that talks to our app server in 3 minutes. And this adapter still is very at a very early stage, and Probes is updating that regularly. If I would have clicked somewhere else now, I would have run into a bug that I didn't want to show you now. But basically, I think that's very promising. The role-based documentation is available on www.role-based.com at the end. It's not as big as the OpenEdge documentation, by far not. So it's really something that you could read, I don't know, maybe in a day or so. For this OpenEdge adapter, there's an Appendix E that explains this. I did last year a presentation here on the backend for OpenEdge Mobile, which basically explained how to write these business entity classes and how to expose them to the REST adapter. And all that knowledge can be used for the role-based integration as well. There's some limitations. One is it's still in beta and it requires OpenEdge 11.3. Currently only works with the first table in the core data set. And I think the next two are not very surprising, because only in OpenEdge we kind of field names with a hyphen, and only in OpenEdge takes kind of array fields. So everywhere outside of OpenEdge, this either causes a problem or is just ignored. Probably promised some new features in the opening keynote this morning, so I think there's more to come. So now let's turn around the integration and look at role-based APIs. So role-based can use REST APIs of the Probe's app server, but role-based has, I think that's just state of the art for this platform, also REST API. And that allows you to log in and log off, and you get a session ID, and you can query data, you can query metadata, and you can modify data. So basically, we can manipulate data which is within Probe's hosted cloud from anybody who speaks REST and JSON or XML. When I started using these APIs, my first impression was, okay, well, they always added those APIs that they needed for a certain use case, because some of these APIs speak XML, others JSON, and some speak XML and JSON. Some are available as the SOAP, some are available as a REST API, so there are different web service standards there. I've chosen REST to work with because it's much easier and had some problems with the messages in, I just couldn't get it to work with the OpenEdge SOAP client. So when you're doing REST, there are a lot of tools which help you understand the REST calls that you have to do. And I use Postman. Postman is an extension to the Google Chrome browser that you can install for free. You can basically run from within a browser a REST call. So if you read the role-based documentation, you'll find out the URLs that you need to put together, for instance, for getting a session. So I'm using this URL, and you see it's encrypted via HTTPS. It's going to robase.com/API and then /login. And so login is the message that I'm executing, and I'm passing as URL parameters my username and my password, which I didn't want to show you. And I'm getting a response back, and that response contains a session ID. And once I'm logged in, this session ID is my key to the other calls. And one of the calls I could do, here in the form of a JSON, is I could ask role-based what kind of objects are there that I have access to. And there's this customer forename appears that we've seen in the portal a while ago. And the result, that's a proper formatted JSON array of strings. And those that prefer XML can use the last parameter to the query, output equals XML, and then you get the data in XML. I love the JSON object model parts and the 4GL, it's so easy to use. Whenever I can use JSON and 4GL, I would use that and not XML. The other things I can do, I can use these APIs to run a query. So it's again within Postman, within the browser, I'm calling the Slick Query API. I'm passing in my session ID for authentication and authorization. I want to get the data back in JSON and then ampersand query, and that's a SQLite query string. And here we have the details. So I'm using Slack query call with the session ID. I want to have the data in JSON. The query select ID name contact customer from customer 4. And I want to have 10 rows. There are a couple of errors in the URL that's case sensitive. The field names I think are case sensitive. And the parameter with the number of rows that I want to have is also case sensitive. And then I get this result. So for updating records, there are a couple of APIs. The simplest one is this update to, where I basically pass an ID that I've received from a previous query to a URL, and then the field names that I want to update. So if I want to assign the contact field to my name, I would add contact equals Mike Fechner, and census and rowbase would confirm this with a message, one field has been processed. Do I have details in there? Above it, yeah. So, and that makes it very easy to read and write data, which is hosted within rowbase. So it could be Proxy's hosted version, or it could be the one that you host yourself. So, there's some restrictions to it. One is a licensed one. If you use the hosted version, there's a limitation on the number of calls per hour, which is based on the number of users. But if you have a single user developer license like I have, I couldn't run more than 200 of these calls per hour. Or I need to negotiate with Progress to get a different license type. But I'm not using this to write an OpenEdge application which permanently talks to rowbase. I may want to export some metadata to rowbase. I want to query some data which is there. And I think for those use cases, 200 calls per hour, which are 3.5 per minute, that's probably enough for most use cases. If you're having runtime licenses, there are other license models. If you look at Progress's pricing tables for rowbase, which by the way are publicly on the website, so Progress prices on the website. If you want more, then there's a contact sales and start negotiating. So it's 200 and 800 that are the basic and professional license. Those prices are on the website and are not too shocking. The other is a single user can always only have a single concurrent session. I didn't find this restriction from the documentation. Maybe I missed it, maybe it's not in there. But it was discussed very recently on the community forum. So if you have two sessions from the same user, you may get responses that your session is no longer valid because the second session now has access to it. There's an alternative to not use the login call up front. You could pass username and password as HTTP authentication and just a different way of authenticating.
Mike, I think that that's a limitation of the tile version. That it gives to
other
users.
I'm not sure. Okay. It's a trial version.
Yeah.
You can't have two sessions without.
Sure.
You cannot have two simultaneous session.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not a trial, it right. is part of the product.
Right.
So how can we use it from OpenEdge? Well, the SOAP API, ABL SOAP client didn't work for me. And I didn't follow up on that much longer because a lot of web servers don't work straightforward from the Progress client. And Progress doesn't have a REST client. So, shall we go home now? No. So REST is so simple that you could help yourself, which doesn't mean that I wouldn't require REST client from Progress as part of OpenEdge 11.5 or whatever, but for the time being, it's not something which would stop me from implementing myself. REST is based on HTTP, you're just sending a URL to a server and you're getting data back, and that's really very, very easy
using the socket capabilities of Progress, or it's just for experimenting with the capabilities. OpenEdge 10 to me or OpenEdge 11 allow you to use .NET classes and the .NET HTTP client class. It's just 2 lines of code that you need. One is creating an instance of the object, and the second is calling a method to get data from the web server. And we can use this. There are open source ABL HTTP implementations available, which are based on sockets. And there was also very recently a discussion on the community forum, and that contains a couple of links. May not be a complete one. By the time this post was there, we already had built our own one, but if you look at them, they're all pretty similar. So they are all opening a socket connection and sending a GET request and getting data back and having to deal a little bit with sockets, yes?
Do you have any problems running SSL over the socket? Did you try that?
Did I try what?
SSL.
SSL, I have to, because you have to talk SSL when you talk to the Rollways hosted cloud. And their challenge was, not talking SSL, it was you need the root certificate. And so the root certificate of the Rollways installation was not in the Progress key store, so you had to import it yourself, and there are knowledge base articles on how to do that. But I hate this low-level system program, blah, blah, blah. So these things give me a hard time, but I got around that then. So that's the sample using .NET. So I'm logging in. I'm constructing the URL string using the substitute function. And then these lines in yellow, that's all I need to do to get a long char variable filled with the response of the login call. So that's what this message is showing. So I'm creating an instance of the system.NET web client and downloading a string. That's it. And then I can start parsing the XML document for the session ID. The ABL implementation, and there all the ABL HTTP clients are pretty similar. Ours is written in a class. There's a get long sharp method, among others. We have the host name as a separate parameter from the URL. Could only do it with one, that we're extracting the URL from the host name. We're downloading it, deleting the object, and showing the message. So both doing the same. When you are writing an ABL socket client, let's see code. There are actually two challenges. One is understanding the Wikipedia documentation of the HTTP protocol, which isn't too complicated. And then the other, if you wanna use classes, sockets have callback procedures only. You can't use socket only with classes, so you need a helper procedure. But once you get around that, come on. More of the feeling that it's because the Wi-Fi here. It will probably time out in a couple of seconds. I'll show you the code from here. So it's actually the method that does the request. It's putting together some parameters on for the socket connection. Something to deal with code pages, then out of the UL we're making the GET request, which consists of the URL and the HTTP version that we want to talk to,
and then we are going to set up the read response procedure, and that needs to be a procedure. After we created the socket, we're connecting to the socket and we're writing the request, and then we're waiting for the read response. Oh, it's coming. And we're waiting for the read response to give us a response, and as soon as the response says either nothing or some data, then we know whether or not we are complete. So there's a loop around it, and a lot of this code is mainly copied and pasted from various parts of the OpenEdge documentation. So it's not really that complicated. And we have similar ones then for posting data, and posting is basically the way if I would modify an object or data in OpenEdge and want to send it back, then it's just a different way of implementing the client. So example implementations of this are available on this community thread, so that's not actually something you need to spend your time on. So now let's put that together and work from OpenEdge with Rollbase. So first thing is you need to get this certificate imported. It doesn't work without. So the way this works is you go onto the Rollbase portal, you right-click on the URL, they get into dialogues about the identity of the website, and you can save the certificate, the root certificate, and then there's a tool from Progress which basically imports it into the certificate store, and that's it. And if you want to know the instructions, look for that in the knowledge base, and there are plenty of instructions. So handling the responses, well, we have to deal with XML and JSON. Not all of the APIs that I want to use are available as JSON APIs, even though I prefer it, just because of how easy the JSON object model parser is to use in the 4GL. If I would be on OpenEdge 10, I would probably use more CXML APIs because OpenEdge 10 doesn't have the JSON object model parser. There's some APIs where you may have to fine-tune data first. Dates, you cannot directly take a date return from role-based, assign it to Progress date. You need to change the string formats. Problem with JSON is there's no standard date representation, so every server does its own. And the way Rollbase does it now is much better than how it did it half a year ago, because half a year ago it was a JavaScript new system.datetime with so like a line of code. I just want to get data. So for the login response, for instance, we're using the SAX reader. So we're creating a SAX reader, we're getting the long char input parameter, starting to pass it. And the SAX parser is also based on callbacks. So this is the callback method. And well, based on the curly tag, we know we either got a session ID back or an error message back. And so we can return that, and we know the session ID and use that for the following calls. So you get object def names, so the one about the list of objects which I have access to. I put in the long chart that I get from the server, and I just use the object model parser, and I don't need any callback model or whatever. This is all the case which turns me the JSON array into a 4GL array of strings. So O array is a JSON array that I get out of the yellow lines of code. And then I just go through the code and copy it into a Prose character array and return that as part of the method. For the select query API, it's a bit more complicated because we're getting more data back. Because we're getting back a list of records. A list of records basically is a list of fields with their values. The way we implement it is we have a method for that, where the pass in the name of the object and then the select string. 0 means start at the first record, 100 means maximum 100 records.
we're passing a temp table, and this temp table will be populated with the data.
So let's do this demo first. I have the code here. The code currently fails to compile. It fails to compile because this e-customer include file is not there. So let me build that. We have a tool which uses another of the role-based APIs which reads metadata. So I go into this tool and I select an object from here. It's again this customer for object that I find there. And it now appears in our design canvas. This is a tool that we usually use to design pro datasets and from pro datasets and pro business entities. But it can also just build temp table definitions. Just entering where I want this temp table to be generated. And then I start generating the code. And that has now generated me a temp table definition. And I'll show you very soon the data that was the foundation for this. Just copy this temp table. So also that file has been created just now, German time. So I copy this to the example project. So it's just a normal Prolog temp table definition. And that now includes our example field that I just created on the fly. And if I run the code, compiler is gone because the temp table definition is now there. And I get two records. And those records are now coming from this customer's object, so there should be two. Let's start with Mike. The one is this one. I think mine is on the other side. So if I would be using this now, for instance, for a publicly available lead registration form or something like that, I could now import them very easily in my OpenEdge application without requiring the OpenEdge application to be permanently online. So each morning, I may be caring about the new leads, so I do one connection, that's one API hit, so even my 200 is not a problem. I may be deleting them there, so that's another hit. I may be flagging them as already imported. And for these kind of use cases where you have something which needs to be online on the web and an OpenEdge application talking to this, I think this is a very, very brilliant solution and much easier to use than WebSphere actually. I want to show you the metadata. The metadata is shown best if I format it in an application. So this is a Progress GUI for .NET application, and there we have the object definition, and the only thing we do is we put it into a grid and show it, but it's being requested from Rollbase now, and we see there all the fields, they all have internal IDs, they have data names, that's basically data type, and a field name with the UI class, and we see a label, and based on that you just need to build your own mapping of the data names and role based to Progress data types, and then you can generate your temp tables. And that's basically all behind that. So now let's do the scenario with the lead registration portal. So this is now completely unstyled Robis portal, but it's part of a Robis application that you can access without signing on. And I'll just create a new new tier. And submit it. So this does not need any connection to the Probus app server. It's all on Probus's hosted role-based installation. So created the record. I go back now into role-based, look for this record. So we see the records that I just created. It doesn't have a customer number. And now I would go into the OpenEdge application. And it has now connected to Robase, got the data into a grid. Part of that is then also the records that I just created. And now I could import the lead as a customer. Basically what that means is I have a temporary record already and I copy it to another Pro data set, which I save against the Probus database. Then the Probus database trigger will assign a customer number. So it's standard spots to Southern code. And I report back the customer number to Robase. So updating data in Robase. So I'm doing this, customer imported with this number. And if I now go back to Robase, and just reload the page, we're seeing the customer number. So it's bidirectional, using a very, very loose coupling between Robase and the OpenEdge application. So the OpenEdge application doesn't need to be exposed to the internet. And if I now go into our standard customer screen, I would see that among all the other records, this record is there. Now a record in our application. And I could not modify it here. And if I report the modification back to Robase, it's then a question of how I implement it. Now I have two different records. I think that's a very nice scenario to have a so easy to use portal application, being assured that Probus is working heavily on even more integration. And I've never built my own REST client before, and it was a task of an afternoon to get into this. So it wasn't really a lot of work to get the first concepts done. So let's come to a conclusion. So there are various options for integration. But before I go through that, we have a partner that is using our Robase adapter. And what they've basically built out of this is a product configurator. So they have an ERP system, which is a WebSuite application, but that's this WebSuite application may be used by internal users. But they have some use cases for the product configurator, so that customers of that application could be logging in and specifying what kind of products they want to prepare an order. And for that they also need to be able to send some master data to Robase. And when such a product configuration has been done, retrieves the data from Robase. But the two applications are running disconnected. And that's the use case which is actually going live very, very soon, if it hasn't gone live recently already. So it really works. And so getting started with Robase is very, very simple. Once you're in there and once you want to fine-tune it, you have to get over potential dislikes for JavaScript. Because when you write triggers in Robase, they are JavaScript triggers. But Robase has wizards and wizards that generate code for you, and then you just have to modify it to fit, so it's really not that difficult. When you work with Robase and OpenEdge, you can decide yourself where you want to persist your data.
in the OpenEdge database, and then you could use the Rogers adapter for OpenEdge from Rogers to access it. Or if you want to have your data or part of the data persisted in Rogers, then you can access this from OpenEdge using a very simple to use protocol. So that's very, very impressive. So, and I think this is really a perfect solution for extending OpenEdge applications with, well, I call them satellite apps. So small applications which are there around an ERP system that either users of your customer have done or you do that as customizing. And if they need to be either managed centrally or accessed through the internet, I think Rogers is a very good solution for that. Especially if you have these island solutions that somebody was using Access or Excel or similar tools. Any questions? Well, and thanks for it. Thank you. Sorry? Yes. So Akioma. Yes. So they are also very enthusiastic about the combination of Rogers and OpenEdge. And didn't have lots of issues. I actually don't know if they're already live or if they're about to go live very soon, but it was a very high pressure thing for them to get this product configurator built, and that was also one of the reasons why they built it using Rogers, because
it's
Akioma. It's also a German company, and well, we built part of the adapter together, and we started with what we had at the time and extended it. Yes. So they're using the foundation as REST adapter to talk to Rogers, and from a web speed application, so it works out from web speed. Was if Rogers is suitable for querying large amounts of data. It depends probably on the definition of large, and I just don't have experience with that. Probably if you use Rogers to talk to the OpenEdge app server, then I think we all know how well the OpenEdge database and the app server scale. For the hosted version, I hope that Rogers is hosting it in an OpenEdge database. I don't know. I just hope that it should scale good. There's a Rogers app server on top of it, and there's some overhead. Besides of network hinges here, the view from the Reliable network, the portal seems to work very fine. We loaded into an object a couple of 10,000 customer records once. And that felt okay. But I can't give you any more accurate response than it felt okay, because it's hosted on Rogers and there are so many factors, but I don't know if I would use Rogers for mass data processing. Those are the things that I would definitely then do with the OpenEdge app server. Because I have no trust in that.